You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Welcome to The Fabulous Invalid, Broadway's podcast, where we present essential conversations with a curated roster of the best, most important, and innovative theater makers working today, from actors to writers, directors, designers, and everyone in between. We took the name of our title from a 1938 play by Kaufman and Hart that has since become a loving nickname for Broadway itself. Always deemed on the verge of decline, yet always bouncing back, The Fabulous Invalid. I'm theater savant Jamie Dumont.
And I'm Rob Russo, writer and theater critic with StageLeft.nyc and host of Stage Left, the podcast, also on the Broadway Podcast Network.
Rob.
Yes?
Spring is in the air.
Spring is in the air. Is that a song?
It's a lyric, I think, isn't it?
Well, love is in the air, from Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Yes, and somebody maybe can tweet at us what the right lyric, but I think Spring is in the Air is like a Gershwin, or I think it's a lyric from something.
Mm-hmm. We're showing our ignorance.
Or Cole Porter. I know, that's bad.
Yeah. When in doubt, I always just say, oh, it's a Cole Porter song.
Yeah. Well, that's not a terrible way to go.
Well, spring is in the air. It kind of feels like we don't have winter anymore in New York. So it feels like an appropriate time to do a spring preview.
It sure does.
Let's do it.
All right.
I'm excited. Well, so far in the spring season, which I guess technically begins in January, right?
Yeah.
It's basically January to May 1st.
Spring is just a word that we assign to the to this moment of the theater.
Much
year.
Like any word. It's all arbitrary.
Yeah, that's
true. We all agree what the meaning is.
Yeah.
We're getting very philosophical here. So there are four shows that have opened already by the time that this podcast airs.
And what are those shows?
Well, first, My Name is Lucy Barton,
yep.
Which was at Manhattan Theater Club with Laura Linney. One-woman show based off the novel of the same name by Elizabeth Strout. Which has been, although it wasn't, I don't think, you know, critically acclaimed across the board.
You can't get a ticket to it.
You can't get a ticket. Yeah, it's been a wild, wild success for them. I feel like they've, they're at that sweet nexus between literary crowds, right? Book clubs and folks who are fans of the author, Pulitzer Prize winning author. And then folks of Laura Linney, right? I mean, just who doesn't want to see Laura Linney on stage for 90 minutes?
She's Marianne Singleton. Who doesn't love her? You don't know what that means,
do you? I don't know what that means, no.
That's her character from the much-beloved Tales of a City.
Oh,
Tales of the City, excuse me.
There you go, yeah. So that runs, well, that will have closed by the time this airs. So bye-bye, Laura.
Bye.
Well,
she'll be back. She does a show every couple of years.
And it's always with Manhattan Theater Club.
Yeah, that's
true. It's actually, she's done a Little Foxes, Time Stand Still, and she's done a couple shows with them. Yeah.
Years ago, she did a revival of the Philip Barry play. I think it was Philadelphia Story, but it could have been Holiday. I don't remember which one. It was both were immortalized by Katharine Hepburn.
Yeah,
and that was for Roundabout, but that was a long time ago. Yeah.
Like the 90s.
Yeah, and she did a play I actually worked on called Honor with Jane Alexander, whose name will come up a little bit later in our show.
Yeah, in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But before we get to Jane, the second show of the spring season that opened was at Roundabout, a soldier's play. I absolutely loved. Charles Fuller's 1982 Pulitzer Prize winning play that is just now in 2020 making its Broadway debut. Kind of crazy, but really, really incredible revival. This runs through March 15th, so if you can get a ticket, I would recommend going to see it. It's sort of a murder mystery crime procedural set on a segregated army base in central Louisiana in the 1940s, so during World War II. And it's set among a platoon of all African-American soldiers. And, oh my God, the themes of the play are just so relevant. And it's amazing to see a play in the year 2020 that was written in 1982, that's a period piece set in the 40s, that has so much to say about our contemporary society.
Yeah, it's so little has changed.
Yeah, yeah, very sad. But great play, great theater.
Great play, great actors. David Island Greer is giving quite a performance.
He better get a Tony nomination.
And Blair Underwood is not only showing some skin, but he is giving people forget, I think, what a fabulous actor he is.
Yeah.
And he's marvelous in this.
Yeah, yeah. Tip of the hat to Roundabout for programming this. Honestly, I've said this before. I think I put it in my review. It's one of the best shows that Roundabout has done on Broadway. And I would say in years. Back to Jane Alexander. The third show of the spring season is Grand Horizons, which is marking the Broadway debut of Bess Wahl, the playwright who has had three plays in New York in the past 6 months alone, Continuity at Manhattan Theater Club, Make Believe at Second Stage, and now Grand Horizons and Second Stage's Broadway theater, The Helen Hayes.
We've seen all three together.
Yes, we have.
We are big fans.
Collect them all, you know?
Yes, well, there's nobody quite like her. Her plays are really interesting.
Yeah. You know, they start out as one thing and they become something else.
Which I love.
Yeah. It's such a treat to figure out what that something else is going to be. And you can never guess it, right? And then when it happens, you're like, oh, this is so great. In this particular play, you know, it's about a married couple who are celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary, living, you know, moving into a retirement community. And literally the first lines of the play, the wife turns to the husband and says, I want a divorce. Very calmly, very coolly.
Gets a big laugh.
As they're eating dinner, and then they just go back to eating their dinner, you know, and it's like, oh, okay. And then the rest of the show obviously follows their two sons trying to make sense of it all, and then, you know, the two of them trying to figure out how to make sense of it all. And it really, it becomes something very poignant and beautiful about, you know, marriage and love and companionship. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much. You know, it's fun to see a comedy on Broadway. Just a comedy.
It's good to laugh.
It's good to laugh.
You know, I agree with that.
People have been saying this for years. Where are the comedies? You know, especially because, you know, comedy is such a thing right now in our society. There's this new stand-up special on Netflix every week. We love comedy, but where are the comedies on Broadway?
We get one more comedy in a bit later in the season with the plays. Only one.
Only one,
out of the, what, four other plays to open up?
Yeah.
One of them is kind of crazy. Funny.
Okay, so those were three plays, two original, one revival. The other show that has opened is West Side Story.
Yes.
Oh my God, I love this production. I think it is brilliant. If you've been living under a rock, this is Ivo van Hove's reimagining of West Side Stories, the Belgian auteur, you know, theater maker who is known for having a very distinctive style.
And much talked about on our show.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we
We're
love,
big fans.
We love Ivo van Hove. So I'm a partisan. So, I mean, anything he does, we just have a similar aesthetic, right? And I love what he does on stage. But this revival in particular is so notable because it's the first time that the show's been done without Jerome Robbins's original choreography. So Anna Theresa de Keersmacher, another Belgian choreographer, she's, you know, a name in her own right, who's a very celebrated modern dance choreographer, has completely re-choreographed the show. And, you know, I was nervous going in, right? Because we all know the Jerome Robbins choreography. And in fact, I strain to think of any other musical where the choreography is more known and is more strongly associated. I mean, maybe A Chorus Line, right?
I would say A Chorus Line, maybe Fiddler. There's some.
Yeah,
there's
another Jerome Robbins.
Another
show,
Jerome Robbins, right?
And, you know, but there are very few shows, and I think particularly because of the film, that people really have a relationship with the choreography down to the individual steps, right?
Absolutely.
You know, and so it was very bold of producer Scott Rudin to bring in two Europeans to reimagine an American classic and to truly give them the freedom and the license to approach it with new eyes. And, oh boy, what a payoff.
It really is spectacular. It's, and it's, you know, stunning. It's not without its controversy because I think people are so beholden to the choreography and everyone has such an idea of this piece that it was quite a bold step. And, you know, I think people are in
two camps.
Yeah. There's no middle ground with this one. Yeah. And I said this to you when we saw it. I feel like this is what it must have been like to be an audience member when the show first opened. Because again, it was a little polarizing. It was it didn't win Best Musical.
No.
Music Man won Best Musical that year.
People
and again,
forget.
People were, there was no middle ground with this. Right. You either thought it was brilliant and daring and wonderful, or you thought it was not great.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, you know, and they have set the show in the present, right? So it's no longer a period piece, which also, you know, it allows it to speak to us more directly as a society. And, you know, they've cast the Jets to be racially diverse, which is also a departure from the way it's usually done. It's usually, you know, the white boys versus the Latinos, the Puerto Ricans. You know, that racial division is different in this. There's still, you know, it's still a racial thing, but it reads differently because of the fact of a multiracial, you know, gang.
Well, didn't Evo say that he wanted it to look like America Today?
Yes. Well, and interestingly enough, in the script, in Arthur Lawrence's book, which is one of the, you know, shortest books in Broadway history, it's amazing how much economy there is to his writing. The description of the Jets is, I think it's something like a symphony of America today or something, right? And what that meant in 1957 was a bunch of, you know, white kids, right? And what it means in 2020 means something very different,
yes.
Right? So good on them for that. You know, the other controversy, you know, that is unfortunately hanging around this production is the fact of the casting of Amar Ramsar, who plays Bernardo in the show. And you know, I say unfortunate because, you know, the show is incredible, and I wish that we could be talking about the show and just the show when it comes up in conversation. But if you've been following, you know, there's you know, alleged behavior, sexual assault that happened during his time at the New York City Ballet. You know, you can read all about it online. There have been statements back and forth. There have been protests. You know, it's a whole thing. And it's sad because the whole thing, you know, could have been avoided by casting someone else. But he is a great dancer, you know, so there's that. But that's also, you know, put a cloud over what otherwise I think should be a really, really triumphant and exciting return of West Side Story to Broadway.
It's magnificent. Yeah. It's breathtaking.
Yeah. And
I love this production.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it again and again and again. but before I get to seeing West Side Story again, there are a ton of new shows coming for the rest of the season. So let's talk about them.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I think let's do it by category, right? So let's talk about new plays first. There are four new plays that are opening in this spring season. Or
only one funny.
Oh, there you go. Well, I guess it depends on your take on what is funny. So the first play...
That's true.
Yeah, the first play that's opening is The Minutes, which is Tracy Letts's new comedy. It's the second play that he'll have had this season on Broadway because he wrote Linda Vista, which was at Second Stage this past fall. But this premiered in 2017 at Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago. And at the time, they were like, and it's coming to Broadway. And then in 2018, it was like, and it's coming to Broadway. And then last season, it was, it's coming to Broadway. So it's finally coming to Broadway.
Finally.
It's actually happening at the Court Theater. It opens March 15th. And this, you know, all I know about it is that it's a comedy that is set in a city council meeting of a small town. So with that setup, I'm there.
Okay, Tracy Letts.
Well,
that's
yes,
all I need to. That's all Letts, I need to right. hear. And I'm gonna go.
Yeah.
I'm also gonna say this and corner you on the air.
Yeah.
You said last time we recorded one of these previews
yeah.
that we were gonna see the Tracy Letts plays together.
Yeah, right,
all the Tracy
right.
Letts plays
yes,
together.
Yes,
so
Vista,
I'm just yeah. waiting for my invitation.
Your invitation. Okay.
Right
yeah.
to see The Minutes. Just
it's,
so
it's forthcoming.
And yeah. And wow, if it isn't,
really
then I'm gonna shame you.
Yeah.
The next
yeah.
play
yes.
coming up is
yes.
The Hangman.
The Hangman, yeah. Well, just Hangman, not The Hangman.
Did I say The Hangman?
You said The Hangman.
I'm
you said
sorry.
The Hangman.
I put
you got to get the title right.
Sorry.
Hangman, yes, that's right. Well, this has also been a long tease, right? I mean, this was at Atlantic Theater Company in 2018.
Which I missed.
Yes, well,
and
it was sold out.
So
it was a sensation.
It,
yeah.
it was sold out before it even
started right?
selling tickets.
Yes.
You could never get a thing.
Well, that's why, you know, because it was playwright Martin McDonagh. It was his first play since 2010, right? He used to churn them out, and then
I feel like every year
yeah,
for a decade,
right.
there was
a new Martin McDonagh play, and, you know, his dark humor, we love it, we're here for it. But what was wild about the timing of it, right, is that the reason he hasn't been writing so many plays is because he's turned to screenwriting.
Right.
And he had just released Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, right? Had come out right when Hangman was coming to Broadway.
Oh, did that movie do well?
It did very well.
Oh.
Yes, yes. So I feel like that also, you know, drove ticket sales at the time. But it's also a really great play. So I actually did get a ticket. A friend of mine went on StubHub and paid a lot of money and invited me as a guest. So I got to see it.
You and your rich friends.
Me and my rich friends. That's right. and I loved it.
I'm so excited.
Yes, and when it didn't transfer to Broadway right away, I was like, oh no, they're not going to make it. And then, like, you know, it was 2 years ago. So you figure, okay, you know, people have moved on. But no, it's coming. at the Golden Theater, which we love. I love seeing things at the Golden Theater.
And with our friend Tracy Bennett.
Tracy Bennett, yes, guest of the show.
Guest of the show.
Yes.
I love Trace.
Friend and friend in real life.
And IRL, friend in real life. We just saw her the other night.
As they say. That's right. That's right. Great. So that's so those are our two comedies, I think.
Oh, but I have to say, have you seen In Bruges, Martin McDonagh's film?
No.
Okay. You need to see this film, Rob. I'm getting cranky about it now.
Wow. Well, let's add it to the list of things I need to see that aren't theater.
That's a long list.
And after I've seen all the theater, I have very little time to see other things. Especially because some of the shows are really long. And the Lehman Trilogy, which
nice segue.
The next play opening March 26th at the Nederlander Theater, is like a 3.5 hour play. Was it 4 hours? Was it 8 hours? I don't know. I saw it at Park Avenue Armory in 2019, so last spring, and it has been this like crazy sensation. It was at the National Theatre in London, it was at Park Avenue Armory, then it was back on the West End, and then is now coming to Broadway. It's a three-actor play that traverses 163 years of history of the Lehman Brothers, who came to America in 1844, I believe, from Bavaria, and Jewish immigrants from Germany who started a business. And if you know the name Lehman, it's because that business, that humble business that they started on the backs of slaves in the 1840s in the South, would 163 years later basically cause the collapse of the U.S. economy.
Yeah, that was a bad day.
That was a bad day. It was a bad day. It was a bad time for America. So this play, follows that journey of these three men. And they, as they die, they play the next generation of the Lehman Brothers.
Great. Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah. Well, I will say, I mean, the production itself is stunning. And the actors, Simon, Russell Beale, Adam Godley, and Ben Miles are phenomenal.
Okay.
Really, 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 really phenomenal.
Well, I'll go.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going. I'm not, it's by, the play is by an Italian playwright and has a British director. I think it was Sam Mendes.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You're the smart one. You're supposed to know this stuff.
Anyway, so it's a bunch of European theater makers who've written a story about America.
And did you just say America?
America, America.
Wow,
yeah.
That's, and I think, the first and last time I'll ever hear you say that.
I think, well, now I'm going to start saying it.
Please don't.
And, my takeaway from seeing it at Park Avenue Armory was that they completely missed the racial context of American history in writing and directing this show. And maybe that's changed since it was at Park Avenue Armory, now that it's coming to Broadway and it's going to be put on that platform and have that level of scrutiny. But the Lehman Brothers, the story of the Lehman Brothers, is a story of exploitation of first slaves and then, Chinese immigrants building the railroad and then war profiteering, essentially. They got rich again in the early 20th century by funding all the armaments of the wars that we fought. And then, the housing crisis, right, which was all predatory lending and perpetrated by these lovely immigrants from Bavaria.
So, great, three comedies.
Exactly, yeah, comedy of errors. And then the last new play that's opening this season is Birthday Candles at Roundabout Theater Company.
Can I just say that I didn't even know about this play until I read this.
Rob
is very good and organized, and he puts everything down on paper so that I sound like I know what I'm talking about. And when I got the email, I had no idea what Birthday Candles was. And then you told me who's in it. It sounds fabulous.
Yeah.
It's
Deborah Messing.
Megan Mullally. Yeah. That actually sounds better. But Deborah Messing's good. I like her. I
love Deborah Messing. Yeah. And she does a play just like Laura Linney every couple of years.
Yeah,
she's on Broadway.
Yeah, yeah. She's a theater gal.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, this is a new play by Noah Hadle. Haidle. How would you pronounce that?
I don't know, but you're definitely saying it wrong.
Hadle. Sorry, Noah. That examines a century of a woman's life, basically punctuated by her birthdays. So,
see, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by that, that setup.
I feel like I was being a little flip about it, but
No flip received.
No, that sounds good.
Alrighty. Well, now there are, moving to our next category of play revivals, there are five revivals coming to Broadway this season, the spring season, and literally all five are opening within 3 weeks of each other, and most of them within 2 weeks of each other, which is crazy. And it's all in April, of course. It always happens at the end of April.
Can I say what the first one is?
Yes.
I'm so excited.
Take it away, Jamie.
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
I am, George. I am.
And ask me who's starring in it.
Who's starring in it, Jamie?
Laurie fucking Metcalf.
That's her official, that's her Christian name.
I am, look, this is like the gypsy of plays, right? We get a revival of this every 5 years.
Well, this is the fourth revival since 1962 on Broadway.
That's a lot. But Laurie Metcalf, yes, please, more.
Well, this will be the fourth season in a row that she's in a play on Broadway in the spring.
I would like her to do a play every season. I am not getting tired of her.
If you believe what you hear, Nathan Lane was on a podcast and he said that they're doing Death of a Salesman.
Yeah, that's next great. Season. Yeah.
So stay tuned for that.
Also, Rupert Everett.
Yes.
Who was probably one of the first men I ever truly loved.
Wow.
And Russell Tovey, who is somebody I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't remember the name of the girl. Imogen Poots. Is that who it is?
I just want you to say Poots again.
Imogen Poots? I think it is. I think I might be right about that. But this is, I think, going to be really spectacular. I'm very excited about this.
It's a play that, like, I'm fine with seeing every couple of years. It's Patsy Farron.
Oh,
who's playing the
who's
wife.
Imogen Poots?
I don't know, but
I love her.
I can't wait to meet her.
Imogen, will you come
if you're
on?
Out there,
yeah, you need to do a play on Broadway.
Yeah,
come
yeah.
on our
did we
show.
Say this? It's directed by Joe Mantello.
I mean, that's like we buried the lead.
Yeah.
That's the greatest. Who's doing the set?
Now you're asking questions I wasn't prepared to answer.
Well, you know, you usually have all this stuff pretty buttoned up, right? I'm a little disappointed.
We can cut this out so I don't look like a fool.
Oh, no, we won't.
I know. Well, now that I've said that, I know you're not going to cut it out.
Not even going to do a music cue here.
Yeah, right? Well, you know, scenic design by Scott Pask.
Oh, great.
That fella. That unknown. Right. That up-and-coming
that's,
designer.
That's
yeah.
good. All right. Well, we're
and,
happy about
and
that.
While we're here, costume design by Ann Roth. And lighting designed by Jules Fisher and Peggy Eisenhower.
Nice.
Produced by Scott Rudin. So this is like prestige written all over it.
It's going to be great. And it's at the booth, which
it's
is
the booth.
Like...
We love the booth.
Great theater.
Yeah.
All right. So what's next?
Well, unlike Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which we see every decade, this next revival is a play that has not been seen on Broadway since 1968. Well, that's when it opened. And it's Neil Simon's marriage comedy, Plaza Suite.
With?
Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew Broderick.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very excited for that. And directed by John Benjamin Hickey, who's also in The Inheritance this season. So he's a very busy guy.
He is a very busy guy.
I'm excited for a Neil Simon comedy.
Yeah. I'm always down for it.
When he passed away, I have to say, let me get this off my chest.
Get it off your chest.
I was very disappointed in the Broadway community for the lack of reverence and respect and proper memorial given to Neil Simon, because people forget now, because he hadn't had a new play in probably, 10, 20 years. The Dinner Party was the year 2000. I don't think he had another new play after that. I think that was his last original play on Broadway. But before that, I mean, Neil Simon was Broadway. He churned out a new play every two seasons.
He really
for
did.
For like 20, 30 years. It was insane.
Yes, and I think there's an... I love Neil Simon's work. And I have said this on the show, and I will say it again on the show. I wish we lived in a world where people spoke the way they speak in a Neil Simon play, because they're all so clever and erudite. Yeah. It's like if we could all sing like they sing in a Sondheim song, the world would just be a better place.
Yeah.
Or a Jerry Herman song, for that matter.
Oh, true.
But I think with Neil Simon, not to get too in the weeds with it, I think there's an argument to be made that his latter plays are not as strong as his original plays. And unfortunately, I think that has
colors
marred
people's
perception of him. And it shouldn't. It shouldn't take away from the genius that his work is.
Yeah. Well, Plaza Suite, I can't wait to see it. I've never read it. I've never seen the film. I know nothing. I'm going in blind.
And you don't know this about me, but I'm a huge Sarah Jessica Parker fan. Did you know that?
I didn't know that about you.
Did you? So much so that I sat next to, this was years ago, I sat next to the theater critic Peter Felicia at the opening of...
Sylvia?
No, Once Upon a Mattress.
Oh, okay.
And it was not the opening, actually. It was the night after. So it was the first performance after they got a devastating review in the New York Times.
Oh, really?
Not good. Ooh. And I'm such a fan that she comes out and I jump to my feet. I'm the only person
who
has jumped to my feet and I'm screaming and I'm cheering for her. So much so she even sort of acknowledges it, right? Yeah, I'm making such a big deal of it.
Wow.
And I sit back down and Peter Felicia looks at me and he says, "Are you her brother?" "No, I'm just a fan."
"You swam the moat?"
"All right, I was a little anxious. My friend Sir Harry, he told me you had an opening for a princess. Any princess. I figured, the early bird."
Yeah.
Wow.
Does she have a brother?
She has, yeah. Her brother Toby was in Rent. She has a big family. She comes from a large family.
The Jessica Parkers.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. Toby Britton Parker is her brother.
Oh, there you go. What names they have.
Yeah.
You know, I sound like the wolf. You know, what big teeth you have. Anyway. Oh, no, it's Little Red who says that. Anyway, beside the point.
Where have we gone?
Where have we gone?
I feel like
Where did it all go wrong? Okay, so the next play after Plaza Suite is American Buffalo, David Mamet's play, which talk about, you know, a revival that we don't need. This is the third revival of American Buffalo.
Yeah, this is the opposite of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. This is
and
this
Plaza Suite, for that matter. You know,
We don't need this.
I don't think anybody asked for it. But I will say, you know, as a critic, I go in with an open mind. I'm eager to see, you know, what they do with this play, David Mamet, and Sam Rockwell, Lawrence Fishburne, and Darren Criss. So three great actors who
love Darren Criss.
Yeah,
very excited for
at
him.
Circle in the Square opens April 14th. The next play, ooh, I can't wait.
Devastating. Yeah. I'm already devastated. Yes. I'm already crying, and I already need my gravity blanket to get me through it.
Yeah, so this is...
But you haven't seen this play.
No, How I Learned to Drive.
Yeah.
Paula Vogel's 1998 Pulitzer Prize winning play.
This might be another one I force you to take me to.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be at Manhattan Theater Club, opens April 22nd. And the amazing thing about this play, right? So in 1998, Mary Louise Parker and David Morse very famously create these roles off-Broadway. It's this big sensation, right? Wins the Pulitzer. And now in 2020, 22 years later, Mary Louise Parker and David Morse are doing the play again in its Broadway debut.
They're just going to kill us all with it. It's just, you're not prepared.
Oh, wow.
You are not prepared.
It's
a masterpiece.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Paula Vogel, I mean, talk about a playwright who, you know, has not gotten the proper recognition, right? We have Mamet revivals every 5 minutes, but Paula Vogel, meanwhile, you know, made her Broadway debut with Indecent in 2016, which was an amazing play. Oh, my gosh. Anyway.
Get your tickets.
Yeah, get tickets for Howard.
Get them now because this is going to sell out.
Yeah,
I think this is going to be
another really great, smart programming move on their part. And then the last play revival of the season in its entirety is Take Me Out. This is the 2003 Tony Award winning best play by Richard Greenberg about a gay baseball player who comes out of the closet.
Which in its day was very scandalous.
Yes. I was a teenager at the time, and I remember, you know, I followed Broadway press, and it was a big deal. And so much has changed in terms of LGBT equality and gay athletes since 2003.
Naked on stage.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I'm really curious to see how this play lands.
How it holds up. Yeah. I loved this play. This was something, I saw it at the Public, we saw it on Broadway. I saw it a couple of times.
Yeah, and it had a good run on Broadway. It was a big deal.
It was a big deal. Yeah. I don't think it won Best Play that year.
It did win Best Play.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This was what, 98? When was it?
2003. I just said 2003.
Oh, I don't listen to
you. Were you listening, Jamie?
No, I never listened to you. You know this.
Wow.
Look at me. I'm like 98. I'm way off.
Well, no, it was How I Learned to Drive was 98. So you were
All right. I'm listening to your major plays.
Yeah. No, but, and you know, it's second stage theater, right? And their mission is to produce, I always say this, it's their mission is to produce living American playwrights. So
I love second stage.
Yeah. Here for it.
Love them.
Fabulous. Okay, all so right. putting on our tap shoes and moving into musicals, I think everything should have tap.
Yeah, I don't think this first one does.
No, it's certainly.
I think this first
not.
One is the opposite of tap.
Correct. So actually, opening tomorrow night, if you're listening to this podcast on the day it comes out, is Girl from the North Country, which had a sold out run at the Public Theater, and I think was looking for a theater. Is my hunch. I don't know that to be true, but it seemed like a logical step that it would move to Broadway and then didn't last spring. So a year later is finally coming to Broadway. This is an original story by Connor McPherson that's set in a Depression-era boarding house in Duluth, Minnesota. And it's sort of like a collage-like show, right? It's an ensemble piece where you just meet all these different characters who were interacting in this very depressing milieu. And it's all set to the songbook of Bob Dylan. His work has been sort of reimagined for this musical. And I saw it at the Public. I didn't care for it, but I'm eager to see it on Broadway to give it a second chance. To me, the whole thing was just very depressing and very disjointed. And You know, it's the kind of musical where the songs are not sort of organically birthed from the scenes, right? It's like, scene, stop. Let's sing a song. Stop. Let's have a scene. So maybe they've changed that. I hope they've changed that. I don't know. You know, Bob Dylan is not a musical theater writer, right? So trying to make a musical with his songs is a bit of a...
Sounds problematic to me, quite frankly, but I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
Yeah,
I will say the only thing about this show that currently interests me is the fact that Mare Winningham is in it, and I love Mare Winningham.
An amazing cast.
I'm assuming other people in
Mark
it, too.
Mark Kudish is in it.
Oh, we love Mark Kudish.
Luba Mason's in it.
Oh, I love Luba Mason.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
No, it's terrific ensemble cast, and I'm forgetting a ton of people.
I should read more, yeah. I think, is the takeaway.
Jamie,
from
read.
This.
Yeah.
All right, now I'm a little more excited about it.
Yeah, so that opens just, March 5th at the Blasco
Theater. Sounds a bit dreary to me. Yeah. But our next show doesn't.
Yes. Six.
Yeah. If you live in this world, you've heard of Six, right?
Yeah.
If you're on Twitter.
If you're on Twitter, for sure. Yeah. So I saw Six in London. And it's this musical. The term musical doesn't feel right to describe what it is, actually. But it's like a 75-minute, basically like concert, pop concert competition almost. It's like an American Idol type structure that is the six wives of Henry VIII of England. And one by one, they each do a presentation arguing that they're like sort of the best wife, right? But the whole thing ends up being this like beautiful sort of feminist take on history and, you know, reclaiming their spots in history, right? Because they're known as the wives of Henry VIII instead of being their individual, you know, selves. And each song takes the style of a different pop diva, right? So there's like an Adele-like song, there's a Beyonce-like song. And this started, I mean, reading the history of the sort of the gestation of this musical, you get the sense that it was almost like a dare that went too far, you know, that like at a party, some friends were drunk and were like, oh, what if we did this? And then they, you know, actually were like, oh, well, actually, maybe what if we did this? And they wrote this show. And I have to say, it is some of the best pop music that I've heard in years.
We're one of a kind.
You know, in a rare move, when you were in London, you texted me right after you saw this show. And I think you even said something like, I'm not sure if you're going to like it or not, but this is like the most interesting thing I've seen in a really long time.
Yeah.
And you said the same thing about the pop score, because you're not a pop music guy, really.
I appreciate it, but it's not
what
my go-to.
But it's not on your heavy rotation.
Yeah.
And because of that fact, I started listening to the sound. I almost said soundtrack.
Da, da, da.
I started listening to the album that they put out, which is it a cast album or is it a concept album? Did it come out?
I think it's the cast album.
It is the cast. I wasn't sure.
And honestly, I don't know what the difference would be, frankly, because the show, I mean, I've seen it, you know, it's just those songs. I mean, there's a little bit of dialogue in between, but not much. It is very much what you hear on that album.
It's pretty much the show.
Pretty much the show.
I can't wait.
It's like Hamilton in that sense.
There's been some YouTube videos because it started previews recently.
And the thing that they do at the end of the show is they do the mega mix that you do at the end of every musical now, where they do a couple songs from the show. And they tell people, okay, take out your phones and record this, right? So it is encouraged for you, like at a concert, for you to, you know, get on your feet and capture it and share it on social media. And that's really exciting because it's a musical that is daring to sort of challenge the form of what a musical is. And we don't see enough of that. You know, we saw a Strange Loop last summer, which very much did that, right? You know, we've seen a couple things in the past couple years that have really challenged form, which is really exciting to see. And this really does that. So I can't wait to see it again. And I think it's going to be a bit of a fan sensation.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater Get your tickets today at SuffsMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
We also saw Darling Grenadine, which I know isn't on your list,
right?
No, but I just have to say, because I was so swept up by this musical.
Daniel Zaitchek, the composer, is really someone to watch.
Really someone to watch.
And the show, I think will have another life.
I hope so. Yeah. If anybody out there is listening, this is a show that
off Broadway at Roundabout Underground.
Off Broadway.
Yeah.
Really.
Sold out. You know, before it even started. I was smart enough to get tickets in advance because
you got them like so long ago.
I've been following Daniel's career for a number of years because he happens to be a friend of my brother's. I've always loved his music. And when I heard that this musical was coming, I got really excited. But that's another musical that really is doing really smart things and really clever.
It's not on Broadway yet.
But I
couldn't let that go because I'm still very much living in that experience.
Sure. Well, keeping with a British theme, the next musical that opens on March 31st is Diana.
Yep.
Which is sort of, I guess, bio musical about Princess Diana of Wales.
That it is, with Judy Kaye.
Judy Kaye's in it.
And Jenna Dewall is playing. I'm a big Jenna Dewall fan. Judy Kaye is playing the queen.
You know, I will say, as you know, Jamie, we had the opportunity to visit William Ivy Long's studio.
Yes.
And he's the costume designer for the show. And at the time that we visited, he had all of his boards out. And to be honest, I'm not terribly excited about the show, but seeing the sort of costume inspiration and, you know, his process got me very excited to see the physical production of the show. You know, when I was in London last year at Kensington Palace, they were doing an exhibit of Diana's fashion, and they had her actual dresses from iconic moments, and you could walk over, you know, you could see them. And I had sort of forgotten, but what a fashion icon she was.
Yeah, she really was.
That is a huge part of this show, I can imagine, is the look of it is capturing that.
No one better than William Ivy Long.
Oh, my God.
To make those dresses.
They really struck out.
Yeah, his mood boards were fabulous.
Yeah.
You sort of forget she's been gone long enough.
Yeah, 1997 she passed away.
It's a long time ago.
It's a long time.
But she was quite a snappy dresser.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see it. You know, it's funny, when my high school did a Vita, and yes, my high school did a Vita, the tagline on it was, "Before Diana, before Jackie, there was a Vita."
You know? Wow, that's so very dramatic.
I know, but, you know, Evita has her musical. Diana will have her musical. I'm intrigued to see it.
You know what my high school did?
What?
Plaza Suite.
There you go. It's all coming together. Well, the next show next new musical is Mrs. Doubtfire. And, you know, it's interesting. So the past couple seasons, I feel like people who write about theater, who see a lot of theater, have been thinking about theater and the evolution of musicals in particular, have been sort of bemoaning the factory-like assembly of hit blockbuster films being adapted to stage. And in looking at this spring season, out of six new musicals, there's actually only two that are based on films and only one that really is a major film, and that's Mrs. Doubtfire. So maybe we're starting to see the trend change. Maybe we're starting to see people backing away from just taking popular titles and putting them on stage.
Somehow I doubt that.
I know, but a theater critic can hope.
Yeah.
Right?
Good luck.
Can dream. So Mrs. Doubtfire, 1993. I mean, I am obsessed with this movie. I happened to catch it like a year ago, and seeing it as an adult, it completely lands in a different way, right?
Yeah.
And I was a puddle in that last scene when the kids are watching their father as Mrs. Doubtfire do the show, and it's, you know, and families come in all different shapes and sizes, and oh my God, I was just weeping. So there's a real story here, and I'm intrigued to see how it translates into a musical. You know, because what you can do with a musical is reveal the interior life of characters. You can't do that really in film unless you're narrating. So Rob McClure plays Daniel. What's the last name? Ooh, Daniel something.
The wife's name is Melinda, right?
Yeah.
Is it? I don't
Miranda,
remember.
Miranda. It's Miranda.
Miranda.
It's Daniel and Miranda. Anyway, whatever their last name is, he plays the husband. And of course, Euphigenia Doubtfire, the maid who comes in to, or housekeeper who comes in to care for the kids.
Yeah, don't call her a maid.
Don't call her a maid. No, that's another musical we're getting to down the line. And you know, it's the team that wrote Something Rotten. I happen to love Something Rotten. I know not everyone did.
I did not care for Something Rotten necessarily as a show. I thought it had some funny moments. Yeah. I also found it very homophobic. And,
oh, really?
And very homophobic.
I've never heard that.
Yeah. Well, all the butt jokes and the gay butt joke, the sex, I just... We can cut this, but I was really, and I didn't find I really disliked that show on so many levels. I thought the whole omelet thing was stupid. However, because of you, about a year ago, I think I started listening to the score again, and I love that score.
Yeah,
now I can't listen to some of it because it's like, oh, that's that fucking omelet number. But the score is really, really clever.
Yeah, they're and smart guys.
Very smart. Very so talented. I'm looking forward to this. I also have to say, I saw Mrs. Doubtfire, the film, about a year ago as well, probably because you saw it and we were talking about it. And I was like, I'm going to watch it. I had a different reaction.
Oh, really?
I did not, did not feel as beloved to me. I had a totally opposite reaction to the story. I looked at it as this man who's like lying to his family.
Well, sure. And,
you know, I went that whole route, you know, and that like, do we really, you know, do we need really, and then bringing it to today, do we really need another story about a man dressing up as a woman to lie to the people he loves? Like, can we be done with that for now?
Right.
So now that I've, as you would say, I've put on my Grinch hat, I will say that I do think there's a lot about the story of Mrs. Doubtfire that might be updated and translate a little bit better than some of the other musicals that have tried to do the same thing.
Yeah, and apparently GLAAD has been working with this production, or someone from GLAAD has been brought in, you know, because there's sensitivities. Obviously, the season after Tootsie, which there was a lot of controversy around, you know, whether or not it was transphobic. And, you know, I happen to think that that story did not work in 2020 or 2019, I should say. So I'm interested to see how this plays.
Yeah, and I am too. And I want to take off my cranky hat. No, Grinch. You call it a Grinch hat. Grinch I want to take off I'll call it my cranky hat. Yeah. Because I am actually looking forward to Mrs. Doubtfire. Yeah. And I hope that they get it right. Because Rob McClure is a genius.
Yes.
I mean,
I'll see him do anything.
Anything. Yeah. And we saw a little bit of him at Broadway Con doing, and it was very funny.
And you can
find
that online, you know, look at the video.
And it was very funny. Yeah. And
he's such a great performer.
And the cast is great. Brad Oscar, there's really nobody better than Brad Oscar. They're doing all those things
And Jerry Zaks is directing it. So
and Jen Gambetese is playing Miranda. Yeah. Melinda Miranda.
Miranda.
And she's someone who is just spectacular.
Yeah, yeah. But anytime you have to do a musical comedy and Jerry Zaks is involved, it makes me really comfortable. It puts me at ease.
I would, again.
About whatever the project is, it could be, you know, Man on the Moon, the musical, and I would be like, yes, Jerry Zaks is doing it, sure.
Nicole Saratori would really like that musical.
Yes, she would.
As a matter of fact. No, Jerry Zaks is like the Tracy Letts of musical comedy directors. I will just show up for him.
Yeah, yeah, anytime. Alrighty, so I'm going to skip the next show chronologically because the other show that is based on a film is Sing Street.
That it is.
So unlike the blockbuster of Mrs. Doubtfire, this is a smaller independent film from...
Which I have not seen, and I think I want to see now.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually, a friend of mine saw it, said, oh, you have to watch this, and we watched it together. And I was like, sure, Sing Street, whatever. Sat down. I loved the movie. Really loved the movie.
When did it come out? Is it recent?
It was like 2016.
It's not that long.
It's not an old movie at all. Has had this rapidly fast writing period. Rebecca Taishman, the director, had the idea to adapt it to the stage. She saw the movie and was like, oh, this has to be a musical. Got connected with New York Theater Workshop and had its premiere there in December, so like 3 months ago. And it's coming to Broadway. It's opening April 19th at the Lyceum Theater. It's a crazy fact. You know, we hear about musicals like Hadestown was in development for 13 years. You know, you hear about shows that take forever and ever. Girl from the North Country couldn't find a theater, had to wait a season. Hangman had to wait two seasons. you know, this show, it's like stars have aligned. This rarely happens, and it's coming to Broadway. I saw it at New York Theatre Workshop. You saw it at New York Theatre Workshop. I think we both had the same reaction, which was that it's not ready to come to Broadway.
A little
Broadway.
More time would be good.
Yeah.
So like this is an argument to be made that there's a reason Hadestown is so fantastic.
Yeah, right?
With all the time they had to get it right.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm, you know, I'm as I always do, I think I've said this twice now, you know, I'm going to see it with as fresh eyes as I can when it comes to Broadway. But I'm a little skeptical that they're going to be able to pull it off because I thought there were some serious problems with the dramaturgy of it. And the book by Enda Walsh needed a lot of work.
The score is great. The score is really...
Well, yeah, then those are the songs from the movie, right? You know, which were really great.
And the kids are terrific.
Oh,
I mean, it's a great, great, great cast. And again...
Yeah.
Anytime you can see Ann Nathan in anything, go.
Yeah.
Because she's spectacular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I don't, you know, Hope Springs Eternal. This is...
Yeah, it starts off great.
It's a really true musical. You know, it's about an Irish teen boy in the early 80s who, like, is like loves synth pop and starts his own little, you know, band with his school chums. And you know, it has to do with sort of the yearning, and it's a coming of age story, and it's so inextricably bound up in its setting, right? Which is Ireland in the early 80s, which is, you know, is a very specific political and socioeconomic, you know, situation. And those kids are, and I call them kids, you know, but they're in their early 20s. They're kids.
I will also say this as somebody who is the age that those kids
were
in the 80s. They would all be 52 now if they were old up. If they were grown up.
Yeah.
It's not my story, but they get time and place beautifully right now.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up in Ireland in the 80s,
but you get the sensibility of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. They get that period in the world quite right. And so that's lovely.
Yeah. Well, the last new musical, not chronologically, but of the season, is Flying Over Sunset.
Carmen Cusack
coming back to Broadway. I can't wait. So this show, and the reason I saved it for last is because to me, it's the musical that I'm most excited to see this spring. You know, Girl from the North Country, I saw at the Public. Six, I saw in London. Diana, it's a bi musical. I know what that is. Mrs. Doubtfire, I've seen the film. Sing Street, I saw the film. I saw it downtown. Flying Over Sunset is an original musical opening cold on Broadway. It hasn't tried out somewhere. It hasn't had, you know, 50 million iterations. It is opening in New York, Lincoln Center Theater. I so admire the balls that they have to do this.
Cannot wait.
It's an original musical with a score by Tom Kitt, who, gosh, that man writes a musical a minute. I don't know how he does all the things he does. It's Michael Corey, the lyricist, who usually works with Scott Frankel. You know, they wrote War Paint together and Great Gardens.
Oh, I do love the score to Great Gardens.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of War Paint, but
anyway,
I like Great Gardens.
But Michael Corey, so he's written the lyrics, and James Lapine has written the book and is directing.
Yeah, so those are all very good things.
You already mentioned Carmen Cusack. Tony Yazbek and Harry Haddon Payton are in it. And the setup, the log line of the show, right? So this new musical, imagines Cary Grant, Clara Booth Luce, and Aldous Huxley on an acid trip together in the 1950s.
I'm in.
If that setup doesn't make you want to instantly buy a ticket and go see what's going on.
I'm in.
Then I can't help you, right?
That sounds great.
No, I can't wait. And to top it all off, Michelle Dorrance, who is MacArthur Genius Grant recipient.
Love her.
Tap dance choreographer. She has her own company. She's making her theatrical debut as choreographer for this show. And I cannot wait to see what she does in a musical.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah. I think even if it doesn't work, if it doesn't all come together on for whatever level, I think it's going to be an event. I think there's going to this is a thing you don't want to miss.
Yeah, well, again, because it's an original new musical opening cold on Broadway. When does that happen?
Never. And my guess is because James Lapine is at the helm, it will all come together.
Yeah.
I'm actually not that worried about it, but I think no matter what ends up happening, it's going to be something you want to see.
Yeah, I've heard like 30 seconds of one song, and I was in love with
it
wanted to hear
the rest
of it.
It's a little bit of a song line right now.
Yeah,
I heard it too the other day.
I can't wait. Okay, so moving on to musical revivals. We already talked about West Side Story, which is just amazing and huge and amazing.
And Snapless.
There are no snaps. Spoiler alert.
No snaps.
Yeah. But, you know, there have not been a lot of musical revivals in the last couple seasons. There's been two, maybe three. And the ones that have come, you know, they haven't all been successful, or you're kind of like, why? Like, I don't know, Kiss Me Kate. Why did we have a revival of Kiss Me Kate last season? It was kind of unnecessary. But...
It wouldn't have been unnecessary if it had been done well.
Well, sure, of course. But...
Except for the choreography.
Yeah, well, Warren Carmel.
That was great.
Yeah,
that was brilliant.
You know, West Side Story and these other two musical revivals, the three together are in a remarkable slate of really hefty revivals. And they're not just museum pieces. Each one of them is doing something really exciting.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a nail biter on June 7th in this category.
No idea who's gonna
win. I know we're not doing that show yet.
Yeah,
but
we're always doing that show.
Yeah, we are.
And I've seen all three because the other two were in London and we've seen West Side Story. So Company...
Yeah,
opens March 22nd, Stephen Sondheim's 90th birthday. This is a 50th anniversary revival of Company. It comes from the West End, where it was a smash hit. Director Marianne Elliott had the idea to revisit Company and set it in the present, much like they've set West Side Story in the present.
And it stars Jennifer Simard.
Well, yes, that's
Company
right.
Company starring Jennifer
Simard. That's right, that's right.
I mean, there might be a couple of other people in it.
There's a couple of other people in it, yeah, yeah.
But no, it stars Jennifer Simard.
Well, I mean, that's one of the many reasons why we're excited to see it. But the like hook of this production and what makes it especially unique is the fact that there's a gender swap in the lead character of Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y, is now Bobby, B-O-B-B-I-E, a woman. And changing that bachelor, you know, sort of dealing with all of his married friends to a single woman dealing with all of her married friends in the year 2020, 50 years after, you know, the sexual politics and the feminist movement. I mean, so much has changed since 1970. Such a really smart insight to do that, and kudos to Stephen Sondheim to allow it to happen, since George Firth is no longer with us, and you know he sort of has to speak for both of them. It's really exciting. And who's playing Bobby?
Oh, somebody.
What is her name?
I don't know.
Can't think of it.
You sort of like her.
Yeah. Is it Katrina Lenk?
Maybe it is.
It's Katrina. Thank
you. Rob is so excited for this.
Oh my God.
Rob, I have been in the room. Yeah. I've been sitting next to Rob now several times where we've seen Katrina Lenk do something.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, recently, sort of Company related. Yeah. I'm not even talking about last season.
No. Yeah.
And there's an electricity that goes through Rob.
Oh my God.
You have such a thing for Katrina Lenk.
And
I do too, but it's very specialized.
It's not
with you.
Me. It's she's such an amazing performer. There's a mystery to her.
Yeah, she's a odd
that is so intoxicating.
Bird. Yeah,
yeah, and so we've seen, and now there's video online. You can see her. She's done a couple of different things where she sang "Someone Is Waiting," and oh my God.
Yeah, there's now I think two versions of it. Yeah. There's another one that just came out.
And
the
how
other
have
day.
We gotten this far into our conversation of Company without mentioning Patti LuPone?
I'd like to propose a toast.
Well,
she plays Joanne. She's singing "The Ladies Who Lunch." Buy a ticket. That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. But what else you need to know is that Jennifer Simard, our lovely, amazing co-host, is playing the role of Sarah, created by Barbara Barry,
guest of the show.
We had a whole episode talking about that. You should check it out if you haven't already listened. Opposite Christopher Sieber. Let me read through some of the names of this cast.
Tell us who's in it.
Because it's ridiculous. Some highlights include Itai Benson, Nikki Renee Daniels, Matt Doyle, Claiborne Elder, Christopher Fitzgerald.
Love him. Love Clay, too. Hi, Clay.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Greg Hildreth, Caldine Massey. I mean, it's just like, it's like they assembled everyone's favorite performers.
Yeah, it's
and put them all in one show. Like, how? How did that happen?
It's one of the best cast shows this season. I mean, it's everyone is so perfect for their roles. And I just will say one thing. Yeah. Jennifer Simard, learn your lines.
Yes. Right.
Get your show open and come back to us.
Yeah,
because we miss you.
We miss you. We miss you. Yeah, but I can't wait to see it.
Is there anything else you want to see this season?
Well, there's one more musical.
And what would that be, Rob?
Caroline or Change.
Here we go. People get ready. From this moment on, Rob Russo will talk about two things. Katrina Lenk.
Yeah.
And Caroline or Change.
Yeah. Well, when the show was announced, I joked that if you needed to find me, if you're just looking, where's Rob? I'll be at 254 West 54th Street.
That's true.
From now, well, not from now, from, you know, roughly the end of this month until the end of June. Because Carolina Change is probably, gun to my head, my favorite musical. I'm going to say it.
It's yes, you put it's that in said. Your you put that in your spring preview on stageleft.nyc, which I highly recommend you go read.
If you don't want to listen to us talk, you can read about it all.
But I have to say, when I read that the other day, I sat up straight.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, he's actually saying
it. I'm doing it. Yeah, I'm saying it.
He's saying these saying words.
It. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so there are two maxims that sort of direct my life. One is, we'll travel for Sondheim. Right. Yeah, Anytime Sondheim's being done, I will make the effort to get there. And we'll travel for Carolina Change. I went to London specifically to see this production because, you know, it wasn't announced that it was coming to Broadway when it first moved to the West End. It started at the Chichester Festival Theater.
Chichester,
there you go, in the provinces, so to speak. And it was a smash hit there and then came to the West End and is now coming to Broadway. This is a musical that is never going to be commercially successful, so I am bowing to Roundabout Theater Company for having the cojones. Lincoln Center Theater has balls. Roundabout Theater Company has cojones.
You realize that's the same thing, right?
I know. Well, that's the joke. Thank you. And if you have to explain it, that's how you know it's funny.
You know, jokes are really funny when you explain
them. They're mostly when you explain
them. So thank you for that
bit
of humor.
Good on them for programming this because it's a musical that needs to be seen. It was at the Public Theater in 2003, on Broadway in 2004. Janine Tesori and Tony Kushner collaborated on this musical. It's an original story inspired by Tony Kushner's childhood. And it's about Caroline Thibodeau, a black maid, working in the home of a Jewish family in Louisiana in 1963. And, you know, you get to witness over the course of this musical, it's a very intimate show. It's a very, you know, simple story. But it unlocks and reveals so many grand themes about American history, about the African-American experience, about the Jewish experience, about change, theories of political change. And
change.
Well, literal change.
Literal
pocket
change.
Change. Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, the overlapping metaphors in this show are overwhelming. And Tony Kushner, you know, It's sort of the pat thing to say that, oh, you know, he never wrote anything great after Angels in America.
Oh, that's not true.
And Carolina Change, I think, is a twin masterpiece of his that deserves to be on the same platform as Angels in America. It's a gorgeous, incredible musical. There's a wonderful cast recording from the 2004 production, the George C. Wolfe production, that please listen to. Tanya Pinkins is incredible.
There's also a great documentary about that season called Show Business, produced by
Dory Berenstain. Yeah.
And that's one of the four shows highlighted. Yes. And you get a very good glimpse into the genius of that show through that fabulous documentary.
Yep. And for this revival, Sharon D. Clarke
will
be playing Caroline Thibodeau. And get used to hearing the name Sharon D. Clarke because she is giving an astonishing performance. There's a video for singing Lot's Wife, which is sort of the big number in the show, at the Olivier Awards last year. And find it on YouTube. It's unbelievable. I'm gonna slap that iron down on my throat. Gonna slap that iron down on my heart. Gonna slap that iron down on my sex. Gonna slam it, slam it, slam it down till I drown the fire out. Till there ain't no air left anywhere. No one will ever be Tanya Pinkins because she created the role and her DNA is in it, much like, you know, Andre told us that his DNA is in Hermes, right? No matter who plays Hermes in Hadestown, there'll always be a little bit of Andre de Shields in it, right? And there'll always be a little bit of Tanya Pinkins in Caroline Thibodeau. But what Sharon has done in revisiting the role, making it her own, and her performance is just stunning. And I'm saying Sharon like I know her, like we're just buds, you know, we hang out.
Well, maybe you will be.
Yeah, right? Get a ticket. That opens April 7th, and it's currently limited engagement through June 28th. So get a ticket, get another ticket, bring your friends.
And maybe you'll sit next to Rob because he'll be there at all the performances.
Because I'll be living at 254 West 54th Street. And that is the Broadway season, the spring season.
That's it.
That's
wow.
it.
Wow.
Yeah. Are there any other off-Broadway things that you want to touch on?
No. I think...
no.
No, I think this is good.
Yeah.
I think I got my plug-in for Darling Grenadine, so I feel very good about that.
Yeah. Well, I will say, Mac and Mabel has already happened, but the other two encore shows this season
are
Kurt Vile and Alan J. Lerner's Love Life, which has never had a cast recording, so you can't even listen to it.
Right.
So I'm really excited to see that. Brian Stokes Mitchell and Kate Baldwin will be
Love
starring
Kate
in that.
Baldwin.
And then another Janine Tesori show, Thoroughly Modern Millie, with Ashley Park.
Yeah, that's
closes
be
out
good.
The encore season. So I know it's not Broadway, but check out encores, because this is also Jack Vertel's last season as artistic director. And, you know, Mac and Mabel was incredible, and, you know, these other two shows. Can't wait to see them.
We're such Encores fans.
We're big Encores fans, yeah.
But what do we love more? Broadway.
Well, it's not a competition. I love it,
It absolutely is a competition.
Well, okay, I'm going to put in one more plug.
Okay.
And that is Assassins at Classic Stage.
Oh, yeah.
So I know we'll travel for Sondheim. I will travel to 13th Street in the East Village to see this production. It's starting in April, runs through May. Ha, ha, ha. They've got to extend it. I wouldn't be surprised if this came to Broadway. John Doyle, who is the artistic director there, is doing Stephen Sondheim and John Wideman's 1990 musical, Assassins. It's a favorite of mine. It's rarely done because it's a little off-putting. It's a little uncomfortable.
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And the cast, Adam Chandler Barat, Tavi Gevinson, Andy Gordolushan, Judy Kuhn, Stephen Pasquale, Ethan Slater, Will Swenson, Wesley Taylor, and Brandon Uranowitz. Just like Company has like every musical theater star imaginable, the rest of them are in Assassins.
Yeah, so they're all working.
They're all
which
working
is
this season. Yeah, in Sondheim shows.
Good for actors.
Yeah, so that's going to be another big one that you want to make sure you get a ticket for because I have a feeling they will go fast.
Well, that's our spring roundup.
Oh my gosh, nothing left to do but see it all.
See it all and talk about it more.
Yeah, brilliant. Alrighty, let's do it.
Bye.
Bye. Rob here. That's our show. Thanks for listening. You can hear us anytime on iTunes. In this election year, one of my favorite new things is Social Goods, an online store that offers a curated slate of statement-making merchandise that gives back to nonprofits tackling today's most pressing issues, from Every Town for Gun Safety to Planned Parenthood of New York, the Special Olympics, and more. Best of all, we've partnered with Social Goods to offer a special discount for listeners of The Fabulous Invalid. Go to social-goods.com and use the code FAB15 at checkout to receive 15% off your first order. That's Social Goods, where every transaction comes with real action. The Fabulous Invalid is a production of O&M Etc. and The Fabulous Invalid LLC, and a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network. Our theme music is by Lucky Chops. Today's episode was edited and engineered by Jamie Dumont and Aaron Kaufman. You can find us online at thefabulousinvalid.com and on social media at Fabulous Invalid and on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you find your podcasts. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.